I'm George Stevens, and I'm a person. I was held as property as a child. Even before my birth, I was called a slave in an America you wouldn't recognize. But folks like you helped me escape north to freedom. And in 1864, I joined the infantry to fight for my country. I fought so all slaves would be recognized as persons, not property. And we won. But today in Colorado, there are still people called property. Children, just like I was. And that America you thought you wouldn't recognize is all around you. And these children are being killed. This November, vote yes on Amendment 62. Amendment 62 declares unborn children persons, not property. And that's the America I fought for. So visit personhoodcolorado.com. And in November, vote yes on 62. It's the right thing to do.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. Well, the good news and the bad news from U.S. Senate Ken Buck's campaign is that even though the pro-aborts have thrown everything they have at him, saying that he opposes abortion for rape and incest, which, by the way, is a position loving toward women and children, he is still moving ahead significantly in the polls. That is the good news. That it might be that the Democrats, the pro-aborts, so overplay their hand that it's mostly just noise, and people are beginning to understand that you don't kill a child because his father is a criminal. The bad news, of course, is that Ken Buck says he no longer supports Amendment 62, the personhood amendment, that he says now he's changed his mind. He will not introduce a federal ban on abortion if elected. And he's changed his mind. He said that he would confirm, he'd vote to confirm pro-choice judges. And that would mean he would put pro-abortion judges on the federal courts, even the U.S. Supreme Court, for life. And that's why we're where we're at right now, because of judges Republicans put on the bench who are pro-choice, including Harry Blackmun, the whole Roe v. Wade court, and on and on and on. All right, Tom Tancredo is doing well. Dan Mays is now at 15%, and the Republican candidate for governor of Colorado, Dan Mays, has said if a candidate was getting less than 20%, he should drop out of the debates. And there's a debate tonight, and Dan Mays, who chose a pro-abortion running mate, Tambra Williams, he's at 15% now. And he said, the difference between me and a career politician is I don't change the rules as I go along. I abide by my rules. And he was speaking about the rule that he made that if you're less than 20%, you should drop out of the debates. So let's see what he does. And Tom Tancredo is within 9 points of Hickenlooper, who's a pro-abort. And Tancredo has stayed strong, and he's been pro-life throughout his career, and he is supported Amendment 62, the personhood amendment. What would be heaven sent would be for Tancredo to win, standing firm on personhood, and for Ken Buck to pay the price of betraying unborn children and saying he would confirm even pro-choice judges. That would be heaven sent. Okay, let's go to the phones. Our number, 1-800-8-NYART, 1-800-836-9278. We've been on the air for 20 years. Some people have memorized the number. It's my last name, Enyart, E-N-Y-A-R-T, 1-800-836-9278. And we have a call about the Bible, and we've got a call from a cell phone that might be dying. So let's go first to Denver. Connie, welcome to Bob Enyart Live.
Hi, Bob. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing. What's up, Connie?
First of all, I wanted to tell you that your show is a blessing. We have learned so much about personhood and about the pro-life movement.
Wow.
And so many other things that I just wanted to take a minute and thank you for that.
Well, I'll give you 10 minutes to cut that out, Connie. So thank you. I appreciate the encouragement. It's valued and it's needed. So thank you so much, Connie.
The other reason I called is to let you know that I am out in my beautiful neighborhood on this fall day, and I'm doing a literature drop.
Right now as we speak?
As we speak.
We got a man on the street report from Connie. And Connie, you're doing a lit drop in Arvada, Colorado. I was involved in a lit drop last night. A team met at the local McDonald's, and there were nine of us, and we went out and we did a whole precinct before nightfall, and we had a great time, and that same team is getting together again Saturday morning. But this is happening around the state at mycampaigntracker.org. The map of Colorado, it's turning purple in splotches where people are helping, distributing literature, bumper stickers, and so on.
It sure is. And that is the reference that I use when I'm looking for where I'm going to walk next. Mm. I walk in my neighborhood, and I try to walk every day because I like to exercise and I enjoy the sunshine.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So I figure I might as well be out in the fresh air instead of in the gym.
Yeah, it's the Amendment 62 Health Club, and I'm hoping to lose another 15 pounds by Election Day. I'm going out 3 days a week, so it sounds like you're doing more than I am. But
That's awesome. It is
really enjoyable. It's beautiful weather. You get to go to your neighborhood or other neighborhoods. It's a lot of fun. Just go to ColoradoRightToLife.org, and you can see where people are meeting for lit drops, or you could do your own.
That's right. And mycampaigntracker.org is a great way to watch our state turn purple.
Yeah,
it's
really,
really
fun.
It
is. All right.
Also, I wanted to let people know about the banquet on Saturday night.
Wow, you're a full service caller, Connie. That's right. Colorado Right to Life's banquet.
Yes, my husband and I have heard Walter Hoy. I'm saying his last name right.
Yeah, coming in from California, what an extraordinary speaker.
We have heard him twice, and he will keep you on the edge of your seat. He has a compelling story that will absolutely touch your heart, and I would encourage anybody to go to the banquet. It's a lot of good food, fellowship, and it's the place to be on Saturday night.
All right. Thank you so much, Connie. Boy, do I appreciate that. All right, that's Connie from Denver, and she's right. In fact, it's 2 days from now. It's the place to be before the election. You will want to be there. I have the honor of doing a year in review, a 2010 update of what has happened at Colorado Right to Life in the last 12 months, and it's just going to be fun. I've got some video to show, just stunning video. Extraordinary events, a lot of fun. You're going to want to be there. Just go to ColoradoRightToLife.org and you can register for the banquet online or by calling them 303-753-9394. Hey, you know our telethon, our annual telethon for Bob and Yurt Live to keep us on the internet at KGOV.com. We're up to 66 people who have pledged $20 a month. 66 people. That is so very significant. Could you help us make it to 70? That's our next milestone. 70 people. We need four more people to do that. And maybe you could be one. You could do it online, kgov.com, or by calling us 1-800-8-NYARDS, 1-800-836-9278. It was on the radio today. It's been all over the newspapers, TV, that the Amendment 62 campaign filed suit against the state of Colorado because of the biased blue book. Well, that hearing was in Denver District Court this morning. And where did I hear this on KHOW Radio, KOA News? Today, the judge, the Denver District Judge Hyatt, has ruled against the blue book suit and dismissed it. And so the campaign is considering whether or not to appeal. And the bias in the blue book is grotesque, including that they say if personhood becomes law, then treatments for miscarriage may be limited. Is that an astounding example of bias? In a miscarriage, tragically, the baby has died. And it is just so blatant, their bias and their arguments against the unborn child are cruel. And that's what Ken Buck should have said. Ken Buck should have said that It's Michael Bennett, my opponent, who's extreme. Michael Bennett agrees with Planned Parenthood, and they take babies in the womb and they kill them. That is extreme. It's also cruel. Children must be safe in Colorado. Imagine if Ken Buck had done that. That's what we need. We need leaders who are leaders, not leaders who say they advocate the baby's life in the womb. And then as soon as they're challenged by girly men like Michael Bennett and by pro-aborts like Planned Parenthood, they immediately begin to cave and say, oh, I'm not really, I don't really want to protect children in the womb. In fact, I'll vote to confirm pro-choice judges. That's how open-minded I am. I just want to get elected. So if I have to promise to put pro-choice judges on the federal bench, hey, I'll do it. After all, the federal bench is 60% Republican judges, and it's almost 100% pro-choice. So I'll fit right in with the good old boy club, with the good old boy club in the U.S. Senate as a Republican who votes to confirm pro-choice judges. I'd fit right in. And he would. Ken Buck would fit right in. What a tragedy. An amendment doesn't lie to you. An amendment doesn't lie to you. Please vote yes on 62. All right. And I'd like to go to the phones. Now there's a Bible question. Our phone number here, 1-800-8-NER. This is from, where's this from in Indiana? Hamilton, Indiana. Joe, welcome to Bubba and Your Art Live.
Hi, how you doing?
Great, Joe.
No, I'm from Huntington, Indiana.
Huntington, Indiana.
Yeah, the hometown of Vice President Dan Quayle.
All right, Dan Quayle. I got a story about him, but go ahead.
Yeah, I've been listening to your plot, and I have. I mean, I've been listening to you for 17 years, and
wow.
I just love listening to you.
Well, thank you, Joe. It's an honor that you're involved with the show.
Yep. Well, the plot, I have a question about healings and stuff. I mean, you say that God doesn't perform miracles or heal people anymore, and I just, that's difficult for me to swallow. I mean, I'm not saying I disagree with you, but it does not make sense to
me.
Well,
Joe, God is the creator, right? And God is the one who created our human bodies. And so, of course, God has the power, the ability to heal, to do miracles. In the Bible, when God did these extraordinary miracles, unbelievers, the masses of unbelievers, they saw the miracles and they would say this. They would say, the fact that a miracle has occurred, no one can deny it. Like when a child is born blind and 30 years later, he's been blind his whole life, and then Jesus heals him and he could instantly see. Yeah, or when God parted the Red Sea and destroyed Egypt's army. So the world saw the miracles, and the world would recognize that the God of Israel was fighting on behalf of the Jews. Today, it's a different story. And today, the Christians who claim to have experienced a miracle, like they'll say, well, I went to church, and I had one leg shorter than the other, and the faith healer pulled on my leg, and now they're both the same length. And I'll ask them, well, did your family know that you had one leg shorter than the other? And they say, no, they never really knew. I said, did you used to buy clothes with one pant leg longer? And they said, no, not really. And so they claim a miracle, but today it's only the believers who are saying the miracles happen. The unbelievers look and they say, well, that doesn't look like a miracle to me. And in a miracle, you know the organ donor waiting list we have?
Yeah.
Well, tragically, people get off of organ donor waiting lists, even young children, if they have passed away or if they're so sick, getting the organ will no longer help them, or if they get the organ. That's the only way people come off of organ donor waiting lists. Joe, have you ever heard of a person on an organ donor waiting list and then they got off the list because they no longer needed a kidney? They got their kidney healed.
No, have you ever? I have not.
No, not one time. And so anyway, there's another perspective to the whole debate. And that perspective tends to be ignored by Christians. In the Gospels, every time you meet somebody who's sick, they get supernaturally healed. In the epistles, when you meet people who are sick, they die. Paul prayed three times to be healed, and God refused and said instead his grace was sufficient for Paul. And Paul had a coworker who was ill, Trophimus, and he said, I left him on the island of Miletus. I left him behind because he was sick. And Timothy was frequently sick, infirm, and Paul said, Timothy, take some wine for your stomach's sake and your frequent infirmities. So there was a difference in what was going on in the Gospels and what was going on in the epistles. And Joe, God wants us to glorify him and trust him regardless of the circumstance of our physical bodies. And that's a part of the message of the New Testament that many Christians have missed.
Yeah, so you disagree with, like, televangelists like Bennington and
Well, I was for many years on Christian TV, and I traveled to Israel repeatedly with televangelists who had healing ministries. And I'll give you one example. A close-in staff member, a leader, a manager of a network, he and his wife had a baby who had spina bifida. And so this is the manager of the network, and the network is owned by a faith healer. And so they had the baby, and a week after the baby was born, there was a company-wide staff meeting. I was there. And it was announced that Joe so-and-so, his baby, has this terrible condition. And after the staff meeting, employees of the network came to me because I was on the air every night for an hour, 5 days a week for years, and countrywide, you know, nationwide from Honolulu to Orlando, Florida, in 80 cities. And I was approachable by the staff. And so, you know, some of the on-air personalities, they're not approachable. But I was friends with the whole staff. And so they came to me after the meeting and said, Bob, why did the faith healer, why did he not ask for the baby to be brought and pray for the baby to be healed? And then ongoing at a Sunday service over the next months, not once was it brought up that this baby was born with spina bifida and we're praying for the baby to be healed. Not one time, Joe. Not one time.
Wow.
And I knew why. The faith healers had no faith whatsoever in their ability to see this baby healed, that God would heal the baby through them. They had zero belief that that would happen. And so they didn't want to make it manifest to everyone on their network that God would not heal that baby through them. They didn't want to make it obvious, so they just hoped it would be ignored. And hey, Joe, let me ask you this. Christians, when their car doesn't start, do Christians sometimes pray that God will do a miracle and start their car?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been a Christian since 1973. So I've seen that for decades. A Christian will try to start the car, it won't start. Try again, it won't start. They'll pray, and they'll try again, and the car starts, and they go into church and say, God did a miracle. He fixed my car. He started my car. But then I ask them, have you ever had a flat tire? Oh, yeah, I had a flat tire. Have you ever prayed, ever, one time, ask God to fix your flat tire? And maybe you're in an emergency. Maybe you're trying to get to the hospital. Maybe you're trying to get to a job interview and your family desperately needs a job and you have a flat tire. Have you ever prayed? Have you laid your hands on the tire and hoped that God would blow the tire right up? And they say, no, I've never prayed for God to fix a flat. What if your windshield is cracked and you can't afford a new windshield? Have you ever laid your hands on the windshield and asked God to fix the windshield? They say no. It turns out that they only pray for their car if it's something they can't see with their eyes. Because when they could see it with their eyes, they have no faith at all that God will fix the flat or fix the windshield or fix the crumpled up hood. No faith. And if God is going to do a miracle for them, he could fix the crumpled up hood. He could. But they pray when the engine won't start because they know that there's at least, what, a 50% chance that it's going to start. And so then they could convince themselves that they just experienced a miracle, and they tell their unbelieving friends, and their unbelieving friends roll their eyes, and they think, what do they think? God is their butler? And my car starts, too, on the third try, and I'm an atheist, and I curse God. So, Joe, I think there's a lot to this that Christians are too superficial when they claim that God did miracles. And I don't believe that God appreciates it if we say God did a miracle when he didn't. We think it's going to help. I think it hurts, and God knows it hurts. It would be like, Joe, misrepresenting a general or a police officer or a judge and misrepresenting him, and that person's going to get angry. And so we misrepresent God, and we say, well, God did that. And God might say, actually, you know what? I would never do that because I think that's a problem. So, Joe, there's a whole additional perspective to these claims we make about God that I think, let's say somebody needs to get to an interview, a job interview, and the car won't start. And then they think, well, you know what? That was a bad interview because the company went out of business 3 weeks later. So maybe God didn't let my car start. Or maybe they're not sure. Maybe the devil didn't let my car start. Which is it? Is it God or the devil? When you don't know if it's God or the devil, I suggest you have a very bad theology if you can't distinguish between God and the devil. And Joe, could I tell you something that St. Augustine wrote in his book, The Confessions of Augustine?
Yes.
He had a toothache. And he couldn't understand why he had the toothache. Why was God punishing him with a toothache? And it turns out that wealthy people who floss a lot and brush their teeth, God isn't able to give them toothaches to punish them. Now, isn't that weird? I mean,
go ahead.
Yeah, if God is going to punish people with toothaches, then why is it that wealthy people, even if they're atheists, God doesn't punish them much with toothaches? Only St. Augustine.
Yeah, that's funny.
So, all right, Joe.
The same thing happens like my best friend and his family, the Kentucky Wildcat fans in basketball, and sometimes they will say the other team are going to lose because they don't have, they didn't give to a church or help people in need out or something. But those Christians on every team.
Oh, yeah, right, right. So, well, how about the bride who's praying for a clear day, sunny day, clear skies, and right down the street from the church is a farmer praying for rain or he's going to lose his crop?
Yeah, yeah.
So, but in reality, yeah, it rains on the just and the unjust alike. Thank you, Joe. May God bless you. I appreciate your call. And let's go now to one of the plaintiffs in today's hearing at Denver District Court, Leslie Hanks with Colorado Right to Life. Leslie, welcome to Bob and You're at Live.
Hey, Bob, you're so funny. I get such a kick out of your show sometimes.
Well, I appreciate that. And controversial, too.
Yes. Hey, I just thought your listeners might appreciate knowing part of the story that doesn't ever seem to come out, the fact that we've been just so adamant in trying to protect preborn babies by using very scientific information and language that would give a precise definition of when human life begins. And we relied on the advice of a Dr. Diane Irving, PhD, who is an expert in the field of medical ethics in human embryology and biology. In fact, she was even career-appointed bench research biochemist at the National Institutes of Health, and we did have an affidavit from her today, and we tried to make the point that legislative council just refused repeatedly through every single phase of the Blue Book draft, and then we went through four different phases back and forth, and they just refused to acknowledge that the beginning of biological development of the human being is the logical place to try to protect babies from, and so
yeah, well, they refuse to admit that that statement is understandable or has any medical or scientific meaning, which is so bizarre, Leslie. It'd be like saying that you can copyright a song, and so the song is copyrighted from the beginning to the end,
right?
And then you have the government saying, well, there's no meaning of the beginning of a song. The beginning of a song has no legal definition.
Right,
I mean, they're just lunatics. Actually, they're in rebellion against God, and so they want to obfuscate. So the beginning of biological development, unless the Colorado legislature, unless there's suddenly a new explanation of the beginning, biological beginning of an organism, unless it's not fertilization, it's something else, well, they're hiding it from us. Why don't they share with us what is the beginning of biological development?
Yeah, what it really is. Well, Dr. Irving said it's not only an accepted medical and scientific term, but it's a universally accepted term, and I believe it's used in almost every embryology book that's been printed for the last 100 years. So frustrating.
Well, when they talk about how when an organism begins, they start with fertilization, and now we're in the age of cloning, which is called asexual reproduction. But when you're dealing with sexual reproduction, you have fertilization, and then you also do, it's true, you have cloning and twinning. It's understood. It's not a mystery about, well, when do you have 46 chromosomes? Well, the ovum and the sperm, they have 23 each. And at fertilization, the sperm fertilizes the ovum and the DNA, the chromosomes merge. And now you have 46.
That's right. A brand new human life, completely genetically distinct from the mom.
Yeah. And so they're pretending, well, that has no meaning. We have no idea. We're really utterly ignorant about when life begins.
They're crazy.
Yeah, it's
tragic,
Bob. But good for Dr. Diane Irving. Thank you. God bless you, Leslie Angst. And please come to the banquet Saturday night.